Your memories, your history, to you, feel like incidents you heard about. Something that happened to someone else.
Yes.
You feel that you don't have a past anymore.
Because I don't.
Oh, that's not true. You have a past, you have a story. Just waiting to be claimed.
You're talking about Data.
Among other things, yes.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the La Serena Bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, sending out cards for his Narek fan page.
Okay, and this week we're here to really tackle the question, is Picard meant to be binged watched?
So, Cam, we've done our binge watch over the last week, and I might venture to say that I actually kind of enjoyed Star Trek Picard, but kind of in the way that you would enjoy, like, a reality TV show that is on, like, the E! Network or something like that. Like, you don't have to put as much thought into it if you just kind of go with the flow. And I think it kind of works to a certain degree. And I think one of the issues we were having week to week, though, is we would watch the episodes and we'd feel like an obligation to like ascribe a lot of deep meaning to a lot of the events that were going on. And as long as I knew the motivations of the characters, where the story was ultimately like going to end up, I had an easier time watching it upon this rewatch here, all in rapid succession. I did it all in like three sit downs myself. But what was your experience like doing a binge watch Star Trek Picard?
Yeah, I think I did it over four watches, but it was like watched one episode, and then did like groups of three at a time, basically three or four. I found it held together quite well as a 10 episode story. Like, I think Discovery, some of its problems, especially in like season two, for example, was it was bouncing all over the place, like especially in the first half of the season where it was like, what is going on with this show week to week? Whereas I found Picard, that wasn't the case. There was a real consistency through and through. I found where I struggled with it was less from a story level. And, you know, there'll be things we'll revisit in this episode and talk through, you know, what worked for us, what maybe didn't still. But what I found was there were certain elements of the show that I just felt was like had no patience to almost sit through the second time through. And a lot of that was plot building stuff that was just like, I don't care. Keep going. I don't care. And a lot of the elements that felt like it was bogging down the series the first time, I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, the Narek Soji story and what have you. But I was kind of shocked in the revisit how little screen time it even had.
I think you just wanted an infinite loop of them sliding in their socks down a Borg corridor.
Okay, Tyler, I'm glad you brought that up. There's actually, I have the Blu-ray, right? And there's, on the bonus features, there's a whole documentary on the set building, and they talk all about the Borg cube. And the documentary piece ends with that shot of him sliding, going like, ay, 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 ay.
So, Cam, you get the feeling that the creators earnestly believe that it was a successful way to showcase the burgeoning love between them?
Well, that was one thing I found watching the, each episode has like a, what's called like a inside looker. I can't remember what it was called, but it was basically like a 5 to 7 minute little documentary piece on each episode. And what I was really amused by was every single episode was the various creators, whether it was writers, whether it was directors, whether it was producers, just so effusive in what they'd achieved. And I was really thinking about it. I can't think of many documentaries I've seen with filmmakers where they just are praising themselves to the high heavens like this. I mean, Quentin Tarantino definitely goes crazy about his stuff. But by and large, you know, you watch a documentary like Steven Spielberg, he's very modest. This crew is not modest.
Joss Whedon, if you listen to a Joss Whedon commentary, all he does is kind of make fun of things in his own work. you know, which is like, I prefer the humility from my creators, but these people are mega backpatters, are they not?
I mean, one of them called Bejazel the villain of all villains. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? Yes, I'm 100%. That's what they said.
Did they ever explain why she looks exactly like Deanna Troi from season one?
No, they didn't, unfortunately. Oh, I was bummed out by that. But, you know, they drop quotes like that and you're like, what world are you living in? It's crazy.
I do. Okay, we've been to the conventions, though. We've seen the writers from Star Trek Discovery up on panels. They really do think very highly of themselves in a way that I just find absolutely baffling. I remember back in the 90s, I would be on the AOL message boards just eating up all of Ron Moore's like chats with fans. They would ask him legit questions and he'd be like, yeah, we totally bungled that one. You know, like he was very upfront about that. I don't get the sense that they have any clue about where the show's succeeding or where its failures might lie.
Yeah, and I would like to say it's just they don't have perspective yet, because I'm sure a lot of this stuff was shot before the show had even aired. Sometimes it's best to just play it back and be more descriptive about what you're trying to do and things like that, as opposed to just like, we've just tying it all together in a beautiful bow of an epic story that will be told for eons to come. And you're like, okay, like, well, that's very presumptuous for a view to say.
Well, you talk about this epic story, and I guess the reason why I could actually enjoy this rewatch a little bit, though, is that I sat down, I was understanding everyone's motivations, what the story was meant to accomplish, and it was an infinitely less frustrating experience than those week-to-week viewings when we were attempting to discern all the motivations of the main characters. Like, we had no clue what Narek wanted. We had no clue what O wanted, what Narissa wanted. And honestly, like, even people who I really liked, like Rios, we didn't really know what his driving force was until I think like the third to last episode. And it's very difficult if you don't know what a character wants. Like, I know it's the actor cliche, you know, what's my motivation? It really is something that you need to have in dramatic storytelling. Otherwise, you're just not invested in these journeys. So going in, kind of like ass backwards, pardon my French, I understood what their motivations were, so I could at least get behind it. But ultimately, this doesn't lend itself to having any sort of shades of gray, because the antagonists, you never... Okay, Cam, let me throw this to your right. What if we knew from the very beginning why O and Narissa and Narek were so afraid of synthetics? Then we could actually put ourselves in their shoes and understand why they were trying to do these things. Would that not have made you more interested? And they could have kind of gone back and forth about, you know, why there might be legitimate concerns versus just painting them as these mustache twirling villains through 10 episodes?
Well, there's a lot of dragging out this sort of information, as you've mentioned. I don't really get it, because there's a lot of things that feel like they're just being dragged out for the sake of being dragged out over 10 episodes. And I think it would have worked better, because honestly, on the rewatch, the stuff where it's actual behavioral things and character related pulled me in more, I think, even more so, because I wasn't having the stress of trying to make sense of 1 hour of disconnected television for a podcast. But at the same time, rewatching moments of Rizzo being intentionally mercurial in scenes on the Borg cube, I just found really dull to sit through, because it's like, this stuff is just wasting my time, because that's not part of the story. What she's doing is obscuring what she's actually doing. So I found things like that really hurt it on the rewatch. So it's weird in that, on one hand, yes, I think the story works better the second time through. But on the other, you're left with a lot of this material that is just there to string along a mystery.
And, okay, Cam, what was the mystery of Star Trek Picard season one? What was it?
That's the thing what I thought about when I got to the final, you know, end of the season of like, okay, so what were we obscuring? Boy, like the whole thing with the Romulans having these visions, that's not set up until many episodes in. So you can't even say that was there for moment one. So that comes far later. And I guess it's the revelation that it was meant for the androids, not the Romulans. But even that gets kind of muddled around. So I have no idea what the mystery is, honestly.
I'll tell you what it is, and this is what just irks me so much. There wasn't actually a real mystery. Like, the thing is, it was actually pretty straightforward in that, like, Picard has a mission to go save a woman whose sister had died, and he wasn't able to save the sister. That was the thrust of the story. The mystery, though, was the characters' motivations. These characters kept doing things, and we never really understood why, but because of this mystery box storytelling, we kept being told, well, just hang on until the next episode, and maybe you'll find out why. If your mystery is what motivates the characters, that is not, like, top-level storytelling. That's frustrating storytelling. And even though I ultimately kind of enjoyed this watch, I might even say I like the series more than I did when we left off at the season finale a couple months ago. It makes for a very frustrating sort of rewatch as well for me, because I ultimately know what their quote-unquote mystery was, and it doesn't benefit the show at all.
Well, Girardi has a line to Picard in the second episode where they're talking about Soji being on the artifact, and she goes, "What is she after?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Like, what is she after?"
Do we know by the end of the season?
No, and there's a part actually in the finale, first part of the finale, where they see the crashed Borg cube and Soji goes, "Good riddance." And I'm like, what? Like, I thought you were trying to save those people.
She was an anthropologist. We got to see her, you know, super smart. I think in episode 2 or 3, where she was like reviving, like speaking to the Borg drone in his or her native language. And that really broke through. I was like, oh, she has something profound to, you know, imbue into this world. And then good riddance. I'm just like, what? So I'm glad you brought up Girardi, though. And I'm going to use this to bolster my point, though. But this mystery box storytelling, it ultimately turns all of our characters into passive agents until we get to the climax of the show and until they start taking action. And you know, that's to say things just keep happening to them rather than them being responsible for driving the action and the narrative. So, you know, Picard is visited by a mysterious woman. It happens to him. He happens to watch her destroyed and blown up by a Dilophosaurus Romulan. You know, things just keep happening to him. And the prime example, though, I think is Agnes Girardi, who's a character in, like, you know, the first 3 episodes. I was just like, I dig her. I think she's a great character. This is not something that we've really seen before in Star Trek. But then she murders her lover for reasons that seem very shaky. And then we discover that it was actually like Commodore O had a mind meld with her and implanted apocalyptic ideas into her. So this, I know I'm babbling, but stay with me. It creates 2 problems. It makes Girardi into a passive agent, and we also don't understand her motivation until it's really revealed. And I'm just asking, like, what if we saw that mind meld take place in real time in, like, episode 3? We would have understood her motivation this entire time, and that's what's so frustrating to me.
And you would have the suspense of her being, you know, tagged with a tracer and having to try to sneak by among the crew, which would build suspense. Like, that would actually be interesting to watch the character try to do that.
We would sympathize with her, though. And other than when we watched her murder Maddox, that we were just like, what is going on? And we could also maybe even sympathize with O if we knew why O was so fearful of what the synthetics could bring upon the universe.
But also, Girardi is a smart person and a scientist. I mean, a Vulcan's going over and giving her a mind meld and telling her, like, the world's going to end, so you have to kill your boyfriend? Like, she's like, okay, I'll do it. Like, it seems like a bit of a leap. Like, a lot of this season is based on dreams and prophecies and all this. And it's weird that to have that sort of thing going on in a show like Star Trek, which is so science-based, and characters who are based in, you know, data and information and judging from what they're seeing, it's just weird that how much of this season is driven by that sort of thing.
It seems more like kind of magic rather than anything based in any sort of science, right?
Definitely seems to come down to that. I mean, when you're getting magical utensils show up in the finale, yeah, I mean, for sure. But I don't know. Like, I had a lot of questions about things that felt stretched out. I still struggle with the whole Dodge versus Soji thing, and that I just wonder if they should have been combined into one character that Picard's on the run with from episode one, and why not make the other sister Sutra and flesh her out more? Because Sutra feels like kind of this pop-up villain that comes out of nowhere and disappears very quickly, and why not flesh out that character? It's just like weird decisions like that.
Well, Kim, I'll pose this to you. Do you think, okay, so we have 10 episodes here. It's probably a grand total of maybe seven and a half hours. I think this is more of a, you know, 2.5 hours worth of story stretched out across more about like, you know, 10 episodes. And there's just a lot of, you know, obfuscation going on throughout in order to stretch this out. And it just makes it a frustrating experience, even though I keep thinking back to myself, I kind of enjoyed this. I was with the characters. I understood what they were trying to accomplish, so I could just relax. I think the for us, sometimes like I'm kind of jealous of the fans that just get to watch the show and they don't have to like scribble notes down as they watch, prepare to do a podcast and think critically of that. I wish I could just kind of like veg out to a certain degree when I'm watching Star Trek Picard or, you know, Star Trek Discovery. And in this watch, I did get to have that experience. And I don't know if any writer or creator wants people to love vegging out to their show, but it might work better for Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you and I are both watching WandaVision right now, and that is a show just meant to just sit down, watch for half an hour or whatever it is, and just, okay, cool, see you next week. And I feel like Picard actually might work better in that regard than if you're actually breaking it down, because there's just so many things that, when I'm sitting there watching episodes on this rewatch, I'm enjoying the characters relating to one another. I had fun watching, you know, Raffi and Rios together, and I was once again impressed. Look, we've taken our shots at the Kurtzman era, especially lately with Discovery this last season and Picard. But one thing they're very good at, I would say better than the Berman era, is nailing down their characters from moment one. And a lot of the characters in Picard feel nailed down very quickly. There's some that get misused. I'm still baffled that we have a full episode dedicated to establishing the relationship of Elnor with Picard and then shuttling Elnor off to nowhere. It's just very strange, but the characters are very specific, so I do appreciate that.
Was Elnor needed in this season, Cam?
I'm baffled as to the usage, because, as I said, in absolute candor, they spend a full hour establishing the importance of this relationship, and Picard has a line where he says, like, I'm an old man, I need you to be my strength, to be there, to help guide me on this mission. So right there, they're giving you the mission statement as to why Elnor's on the show. He then proceeds to do none of that on the show. It's very baffling to me. I don't get it.
If they had turned Remembrance, you know, it was, let's say they're stretching out 3 episodes, right? And they had turned all the story into just Remembrance, right? For those first 3 episodes. And then they excised Absolute Candor. Because I honestly don't think Elnor really contributed anything to the show story-wise. Like, he didn't really make any sort of difference. I think you end up, you know, like I said, you're already jumping from, like, episode one to essentially, like, Stardust City Rag. And I think there's a lot we can criticize about that. But at least it got, like, the story going. And then I think from there you could just jump, you know, to Nepenthe. And then you have your finale. I think you could have really cut this down to like 4 or 5 episodes, which is just bizarre to think.
Did you find the first 2 episodes tough to sit through on the rewatch? Because I did. I found them just to be complete exposition fests that I found a little bit of a slog.
Okay. To answer your question, no, I did not. I actually sat down and watched all 3 episodes all in a row. And I actually found Maps and Legends episode 2. That was the one that I think... So the other thing that I did, Cam, over this rewatch is I listened back to every single one of our podcasts as we reviewed the episodes week to week. And I think out of all of them, you and I like just hate Stardust City Rag episode 5 the most, like in retrospect. But at the time, we were always complaining about Maps and Legends episode 2. I think that was an exposition dump. It did not work for us. But on rewatch, I just... Anytime exposition came on screen, I just knew none of it mattered, so I could totally tune out and I could go with the character beats, like the Stargazer Doctor visiting Picard, Picard reaching out to Raffi, like that sort of stuff. Even the Soji and Narek stuff, which we didn't know at the time where it was ultimately going to lead to, but I was still kind of intrigued by what they were trying to do there. So those first two episodes, no, I did not find them to be like a drag to watch. I actually found it much easier to watch, especially those first three episodes, knowing ultimately what they ultimately were meant to be.
You see, I found episode three was where it grabbed me more. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to go now, because I found the first two just, even the Doctor stuff. I like David Paymer as much as the next guy, although I don't know if the average guy really knows who David Paymer is.
She's like, he's the new Justin Bieber, I think, right?
That's right. But that whole scene, I'm just like, why did they not just set up his medical condition from moment one? Like, why did I need this, like, set up in episode two? It's weird in that they have this whole journey of Picard aging, and I'm like, this illness does not factor in for almost the entire season. Why are we, like, not mentioning this from maybe early in the show and dealing with it throughout, as opposed to a random character popping up in episode two? So things like that, I was like, okay, like, I don't have the patience for this. I did the first time through.
That moment I was actually okay with, because I think what the series was ultimately trying to establish is that Picard has a universe outside of the TNG crew. Although we do get one of the dumbest explanations ever, where we had the Romulan helpers say to Picard, let's get Geordi, let's get Worf. And Picard says, no, 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 they'll risk their lives just for me out of loyalty. Let's ask other people to risk their lives just out of loyalty. People I don't care about as much. It's like, what? And that's the thing. That it really is like egomaniac Picard throughout this season, because he's going to Raffi, who he kind of ditched to the side, let her get fired, left her in a trailer park. And he says, look, I've got something you'll be interested in. Come risk your life for all of this. He does the same thing to Elnor as well. And just like, what? This guy is an egomaniac. This is not the Picard that I left off with. And I know that Patrick Stewart was really excited to, you know, play a different kind of Picard. But like, I never thought of Picard as just somebody who is so selfish.
It's interesting in that a lot of what they talk about on the behind the scenes on this is that this is a story of characters who've lost all hope. And it's something that I began to reflect on over the course of the season, was a lot of ugly things happen. Moments that actually you and I both kind of bumped on when we were watching the show is like, oh, I don't like that at all. You know, the death of Yicheb, which we've gone on to ad nauseum. But that the Raffi scene with her son, moments like this that felt like, what is this here for? And you begin to realize that the concept of those moments was that they were about taking the characters to the lowest point, so that by the time we would get to that finale, we could restore hope. And these characters who were miserable would be hopeful again. And like, it's the sort of thing I can understand why the storytellers wanted to do that. But I began to wonder if, you know, this whole format of the 10-hour movie. I don't know about you, Tyler, but I don't want to watch a lot of 10-hour movies about people being depressed.
OJ Made in America was great, but other than that, I agree. Like, who is this for? Like, who is this for, Cam?
Yeah, like, it's a bit of an ask, and I think you want to, I don't know, have more levity, because if this was a 2-hour Star Trek movie made for streaming, I think it could really work. I think no problem. You have these characters dragged down to a low point and rise up at the end. Again, 2-hour movie makes complete sense. You know, look at Mad Max Fury Road, one of the best movies of the last decade. That's a very grim movie. But imagine it was 10 hours long. You'd be like, oh my God, like this is so grueling. This is punishing to watch, like the misery of this world. And I think that's something they kind of ran into with like just the extended Borg cube stuff, which is kind of depressing. You know, the deaths of all those characters, Hugh being knifed to death, Hugh watching his Borg friends be shot in the head. It's like all this stuff is there just to keep pounding into your head, like that these characters are being dragged down to their lowest level. And it's like, okay, like it feels repetitive when it shouldn't feel repetitive.
No, I agree with you. And it's, I have hope that the show maybe says, okay, so we've gotten rid of all that in season one. Maybe we can bring some optimism into season two. Cam, do you think they've learned their lessons from season one? Do you think that they are open to some sort of realization that maybe not everything worked in this first season?
I have no evidence to think that, but
yeah,
maybe. I don't know. To be fair, it was a reasonably well-reviewed show. So it's not like there was a huge blowback that might make them go like, we really misjudged this one. So there are a lot of people that really responded well to this first season. So I'm just genuinely hopeful that that the hope is now restored in our characters. And in season two, we can deal with Gollum Picard. We can take that relationship he might have with Soji and work with that and take that into interesting levels. Like, hopefully the crawling out of the muck of depression season is over and we can just move into something more interesting, and at least interesting for me.
Well, Cam, that hope is you.
Part thank you, one. Thank you.
Just part one. Yeah. Who knows when we'll see part two? It'll be a mystery.
Very true.
Cam, we don't need to relitigate every single issue episode by episode, but why don't we go through them and just talk about what works or what might have surprised us upon rewatch? Let's start with Remembrance. I thought it was a good jump off point for what they wanted to accomplish here. We were gripped. I can tell you by our episode by episode reviews that we're doing, it was really only until we got to the season finale where you could tell that you and I were just exasperated. Like, we had been tugging at the seams of episodes, throughout the season, but we were still on board. We still mostly enjoyed it. But I think by the time we got to the finale, that's where we were just totally kind of off board. But I think, it's a strong finale for me. I'm still baffled by Narek talking about his dead brother that he lost last year, and it was a very unexpected death. And then, Cam, nothing ever came of that.
Not only that, but he's like, I've got this brother. Oh, he died. Oh, it's very sad. Oh, you shouldn't have to deal with me. You fix people. You don't want to fix me. Boom. Next scene, we see of those couple, they're in bed. I'm like, yes. What the hell just happened? Yes. This is insane.
I wish I had Soji's skill with enticing people like that, right?
Yeah, not the best setup to your villain, but Narek, like Elnor, is not the best dealt with character over the season. I thought there were some interesting ideas, though, because there is a line to Picard, be the captain they remember. And you were talking about how this is a more arrogant Picard, and I wonder how much of that is the character being driven by being the captain he remembers of himself versus the captain that he was. So maybe that's a little bit of where this kind of monstrous ego Picard comes into play.
Yeah, I monstrous ego Picard. I love that, Cam. Speaking of monstrous egos, Remembrance really drove home to the fact that much of the dialogue is so overwritten. It feels as if like it's a poetry session back at university and like it open mic night or something. I've got some lines for you. It's when Dodge first appears to Picard and she's like, "I was drawn to you like lightning to the ground. And the same lightning that got me out of that situation with Romulan agents, it led me to you." I'm like, oh my God, like this is just like barf worthy right here. And I'm just like, but I'm sure the writers are just patting themselves on the back for this sort of stuff. I don't know if it was a different director or a different actor, delivering this stuff, maybe it could have worked better, but I just can't imagine this sort of stuff, this flowery writing, coming up on like, say, Deep Space Nine, for example.
Well, we know that Star Trek dialogue of the previous eras was very theatrical. Like, it had a Shakespearean kind of feel to it. What's been interesting in these newer Kurtzman Star Trek shows is that they often want to keep the dialogue, but they like to play it more realistic or more grounded performances with the actors. And I wonder if it's kind of a weird bumping up of those two things. Like, it doesn't quite mesh in moments like that.
I think they just haven't quite figured out the aesthetic of the series and how to line it up with writing. And look, if you look back in the first two seasons of TNG, it looks kind of weird and different. And the directing is different. The lighting is different. The editing is different than what we get from the Berman era season three onward, all the way until the end of Enterprise's run, where it is more of a consistent kind of feel. They just don't have that. It's just all over the place, I think, right now in the Kurtzman era, save for, say, Lower Decks.
Yeah, yeah. So Something else I was kind of a little confused by is a lot of this season is debatably about Picard aging. There's a lot of that in the beginning, that his life is kind of over and it's about him getting that spark to go out again. That really does feed into the finale. But like, there's a lot of stuff in this where he's playing old, but then you have that scene where Daj explodes and like Picard goes flying across the screen. And we don't like deal with any of the physical ramifications of an aging man dealing with this sort of thing. Like, it plays kind of, or it kind of pays lip service to the idea of Picard getting old, but it doesn't deal with sort of the limitations other than like moments of him, going up steps really slowly, things like that. It's kind of weird. Like, I would have liked more of playing with the aging thing. And this is something I've seen other franchises really fail worse at. Like, I think of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where they really made a big deal. Like, this is Indiana Jones older, and there's nothing in that movie that really in any way indicates he's older. I think Picard does a better job, but I wish they doubled down on that a little more, because it's not like that character was ever afraid to look frailer in his previous adventures, other than maybe some of the movies.
So I think what you're saying is, after Picard was blown across that parkade, we should have devoted the entirety of episode 2 to having him ask Riker to take a knife and sacrifice Picard while he's laying there in bed, right?
Stop reading my mind.
You wanted an ethics part 2, like a follow-up to one of our fan favorite episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's right. That's right. But yeah. What about like a moment where we find out that like the Romulan helpers had to come get him or something because he was injured? Like, I don't know. There's little like one line of dialogue you throw in there or something just to acknowledge this is an older character, I think would have worked a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's jump over to Maps and Legends. We start off with that first contact day massacre on Mars. And there's a moment here where I think we ultimately kind of get at what doesn't work for me with this series overall. And they're making fun of that one android, F8. And well, one of the characters back on Mars is like, well, you can't offend them. They're not people. And guess what, Cam? I believe she's right. They aren't people. They are robots. As much as I like Data, I don't believe that his life is just as valuable as mine. I believe, I am a naturally created being. I am not a robot. I am not a program. And so if you're asking me to believe that all of these androids, their existence is, it would be equal, 12 androids equal to 12, infant babies like that could get run over by a train, I'm saving those infant babies. Like, I don't care. And this is why this ultimately isn't something that works for me. Even though you watch an episode or a film like Ex Machina, and I think that they tackle the way that we think of like the sanctity of life in a far more intriguing way when it comes to, humans versus robots.
Yeah. And I mean, much of what Picard does is blur the line, both with Soji and Daj, as well as Picard himself, by the end of the series. And that kind of sidesteps the argument in a lot of ways, because it's like, okay, well, they're neither one or the other, so we're not really making that argument. When we're talking about like the one, that took part in these attacks, the one we see shooting himself in the head with a phaser, as the phaser to the head metaphor is not even a metaphor, it's just the trope is used over and over again in this season. But this is different. It's kind of like in the Star Trek universe, comparing it to the Doctor on Voyager versus, do you remember that two-parter with the holograms where there's the ones they free or something that are like mining programs are basically just
the Hirogen two-parter?
Was it the Hirogen one? It might have been, or it was Hope and Fear, the one with the renegade hologram character.
Yeah, that was the Hirogen one.
Was it? Okay, the guy who goes, yeah, that's right, who goes and frees the other holograms, and they're like mining programs that are like very basic programming, and his whole mission was basically in service of something that was not what he set out to do, really.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I think you, okay, I don't want to pick on you, but mm-hmm. Aren't those two different episodes? There's the Hirogen two-parter where they're all being hunted by the Hirogen in that simulation, and there's also this episode where the Doctor encounters all these holograms, and they're only programmed up to a level being able to like scrub like you know, guck off a floor, and he's saying like, well, what if they're capable of more? I think those are two different episodes.
Okay. Maybe my mind is fuzzy. It's the one where it's the 2-hour episode with the renegade hologram who I think kidnaps the doctor, and they go off to, to free holograms.
Yeah, but that one has nothing to do with mining. That's a different
episode. What were they? So, but doesn't he find holograms that aren't of the like the advanced program?
That's a different episode.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm blurring them together. I apologize, folks. But nonetheless, like, I think that's an interesting comparison point, though. The doctor versus those types of holograms. And that's what...
Oh, wait. Sorry, Cam. Cam, you are right. You are. I'm thinking back at... They encounter a different ship in which there are holograms with only, like, limited capacity. You're totally right. But I think there's, like, yet another episode. Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of the episode where, like, the EMHs, we find out that the Lewis Zimmerman programming has been superseded, and all these other EMHs are stuck, like, cleaning out the Jeffries tubes back in, like, the Federation territory.
Oh, okay. Well, as you can see, we're not finely programmed. We are very much those gut-cleaning holograms.
So listeners, after that 7-minute segue, what's the point you're making about maps and Legends, Cam?
Right, just that, like, when you're talking about the difference between the androids, like, the show is kind of holding up these two things, like these very advanced versions, like the Dodge Soji, versus the ones we're seeing that took place in the attack and telling us they're the exact same thing, when I do think there is a difference in the Star Trek world.
I know, I totally agree. One other thing I just want to add about Maps and Legends, it was interesting that he goes and visits, you know, the Admiral, and he says, look, I need a scout ship, and look, if you think my Admiral ranking is too high profile, I'm willing to be demoted. And she does the absolute effing hubris line, which won over a lot of fans, I'm sure. But I think that was actually an interesting point, because I think a lot of people are kind of expecting, like, oh, they'll give Picard a ship, he'll get his commission back, and he'll go off on another Starfleet adventure. I think that was actually an interesting kind of decision on the part of the writers, and like, no, he's not. It's not going to just kind of unfold just the way that we'd expect it, like this.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's a no-win task for the actress who plays the Admiral, because you're a character that's designed to tell the lead character, the beloved lead character, that, you know, he's basically an idiot. That's what she's basically saying to him throughout much of the her appearances on the show. But I guess I can admire the show for doing it.
Yeah, Ben Sisko is able to get over that after Emissary, when he told Picard off as well. So there's still hope for you, Admiral Kirsten Chaplin. Is that it? Something like that?
No, it starts with a C, though. You're close.
It's definitely Kirsten something.
Yeah.
Why don't we debate what hologram episode, Cam, for another 7 minutes? Okay. So the end of let's get through these. So the end of is the beginning. I'm like, okay, you're finally getting the story going. I'm down with it. We've got this Rios guy. Raffi's building a crew. I'm down with where the story is going. I still think that the first three episodes could have been all mushed together into just one single hour-long episodes, maybe 80 minutes long, and I would have been content.
I agree. I think it would have been stronger that way. I mean, there's stuff still in this that I scratch my head about. All the stuff to do with the first Romulan taken in by the Borg and her shared mythical framework, I'm still just like, okay, I don't know that I really follow this that well.
Yeah. Absolute candor. You said it earlier. I just want to reemphasize, you know, where Jurati's like, well, she was sent to the cube for a reason. And I think also Narissa said that. I think she even said, like, little robot girl has a plan. No, she doesn't. This is why this is frustrating, because we're trying to ascribe meaning to all of these, you know, statements. But it's very clear that the writers don't actually know what they're doing, or else they wouldn't try to film it in a way in which you're supposed to assume or interpret that there is profound significance to what people are saying.
Yeah, and speaking of profound significance, a lot of what we see of Rios early on is this tortured character. He's reading that, you know, existential books and what have you. I made a note after this episode. I said, is he supposed to be a parody of gritty characters? Because honestly, I can't tell.
It's tough because, like, he's literally smoking a cigar. He's got, like, this piece of shrapnel in his shoulder when we first meet him in the previous episode. And he seems like a parody, but I think they're trying, or at least the actor is trying to portray him earnestly. And it's just, it's kind of weird. But the thing is, the first couple episodes, I was just like, eh. But by the last couple, I was just like, oh, this guy, like, he's got that kind of sweet inner core to him. I can get behind him. It's just, I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah, like, I really like Rios as a character, so it's not really a criticism, because I think Santiago Cabrera is really great on this show, and I'm really excited to see what he does in the next season. I think he's one of the real strengths going into the next season. But when you have a character reading a book called The Tragic Sense of Life, it feels like the sort of thing you would see a character read in, like, a Naked Gun movie who's supposed to be, like, downbeat. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's almost too on the nose that you go, oh, wait, maybe the writers are commenting on the concept of the gritty character, which is very much a thing in pop culture now, you know, with the Nolan Batmans and what have you. Like, that's something we see a lot of, is these gritty, downbeat characters. Maybe they're making a comment on that, but I'm not sure. I have no confidence they are, really.
What is the comment that they're making, Cam?
That they're inherently ridiculous? I have no idea.
The thing is, they ultimately don't come down and say anything. They ultimately turn him into kind of an earnest character that we can get behind and cheer for. But yeah, that I think we were kind of like snickering about this character in his first couple of appearances on the show. I do remember that at the time.
He's got charisma, though. You cannot deny that. That's why it works.
Yeah. Jumping over Stardust City Reg, you and I, we hate this episode. I think it's a big ask for us to watch torture porn in a Star Trek series, especially if that's your teaser with what happened to Icheb. And then it's a bigger ask if the climax has to do with Seven of Nine committing first degree murder, kind of ruins a character, as if, like, that time spent with Janeway as her mentor just didn't matter. She didn't pick up any lessons because she was so driven by hatred because of what this really lame villain, Bejazel, did to Icheb, who, you know, people like as a character in Star Trek.
How dare you say that about the villain of villains?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just a tonal disaster. Like, I think there's actually a pretty consistent tone throughout Picard. Like, when we talked about some of the other Discovery seasons, the tone was kind of, you know, bouncing all over the place. I think the actual series of Picard holds together very well tonally. This episode is the one that really jumps the tracks, though, where you've just got really miserable stuff mixed with, like, characters putting on funny hats and going on wacky Star Trek capers. It just is a bizarre blend. But you know, there's a line in this one that I made a note of, where they talk about how Soji's on the cube to find the truth. Is she?
I don't know what the truth is. And what does it have to do with the Borg?
Okay, the Maddox thread, tying this all together with this character of Maddox, I struggle with the Maddox element, because I get how he brings the characters in. Obviously, the relationship with Data, I think that's important. The Jurati stuff is important. But he's not a character, and that becomes, I think, a bit of a problem here, because a lot of this is characters putting a lot of meaning on what this character was doing off screen that we don't really understand. Because when they talk about how he put Soji on the cube to find the truth, I'm like, okay, did she know she was supposed to do this? I don't think so.
How do you find the truth on the cube?
I'm still looking, Tyler.
Because what happened, though, it was Narc that got the truth out of her by doing that weird Romulan ritual and broken pieces, and then they realized where the synth planet was. I think ultimately what the writers initially must have been thinking is, like, let's do a Borg origin story about how the Borg that we see them now, it's really from that same seed in which the admonition, those weird robot demons from another dimension that the Romulans were so fearful of. I wonder if they kind of planted the seed for the Borg and kind of melted, you know, organic and cybernetic stuff. Like, I that's my best guess for what the writers were going for, because based on all these lines about how Soji is seeking the truth and she has a reason for being on the cube and that she's got an important, like, no, she doesn't. And so that's why it's frustrating when like the writers are ascribing so much importance to all these particular moments, and you realize at the end it doesn't actually add up to anything.
Right. Like, I would argue that all the clues in the season, mostly, other than these things they're ascribing to characters, do add up to an overall story. Like, they don't feel like, well, you know, some of the other Star Trek seasons, the live action seasons, have dropped threads along the way where you're just like, what became of that? Like, that went nowhere. I would say Picard holds better together than some of those other seasons. But it is moments like this where they keep telling us things that characters were doing that I was really struggling with, because I was very much making a conscious effort as I rewatched this to go, okay, this is the rewatch. I know where the show goes. Are they guiding me there? And sometimes they are, and then sometimes they aren't. So it's back and forth. I did kind of appreciate, though, how they referenced Soong in this episode. And at the time, you're like, oh, of course, Dr. Soong, who I know so famously from TNG, when obviously it's Alton Soong who we'll meet in the finale. So I kind of like that they were teasing that.
Okay. Jumping over to the impossible box, I think it was actually kind of an interesting way of, you know, reconciling Picard's own feelings about, you know, his Borg assimilation. Okay, I get it. Because honestly, I don't think everything was resolved for him in First Contact. I think what kind of bummed us out, though, is like we ultimately never got any sort of confrontation or resolution with the Borg Queen. Like we were kind of anticipating it. We got like a split second flash of her, like when he was having flashbacks, but that was about it. And I think the show could have built to something really interesting if they brought her back, but maybe they thought that would have been too cheap or something. I don't quite know.
Possibly. Like the use of the Borg cube in this entire season is questionable. Like, it doesn't contribute really much of anything to the story. So I'm not sure if I'd be arguing in favor of bringing more Borg elements in versus just maybe even stripping all that stuff out and just refining the story down into something a little more clean cut. So
Cam, Borg cube did not need to be in the season for us to get to where we ultimately ended up. Like, that it could have been on any other alien ship. It could have been an artifact from, I don't know, remember that alien species from 100,000 years ago that was featured in The Last Outpost in TNG? It could have been an artifact from that. The Borg really did not play any sort of factor in this. And unless you really wanted to build up to that moment with Picard going back to the Borg cube, okay, sure. I think it's mostly about that cultural cachet that it carries if you're trying to market a show. Or wouldn't it be cool if we go to like a derelict Borg cube? I'm like, okay, it would be cool, but are you going to do anything all that interesting there? And we didn't really get that.
And thematically, it makes sense to have the Borg because you've got this merging of flesh and, you know, cybernetics. That's what much of this season's about. That's what Picard is going to be by the end of the series or of the season. So like thematically, I understand why they want to tackle it. It's just that they never quite justified the use of it, even if it does connect well thematically with everything that's going on. I just wish they'd done a little more there. And it's also there to, you know, obviously give a connection for Seven of Nine to come onto the show as well. It's just that nothing that specifically happens on the Borg cube is that meaningful. And that actually brings me on to Narek, who I made notes about in this episode, in that we've beat up on Narek a lot, but there's things about the character, like, I can kind of respect they were trying to do. Like, they were trying to write an actual spy character, a Romulan spy who gets too close to his mission. And I think there's interesting things there, but the character is written so threadbare, and it's confusing as to what his motivations are, because it seems like he's just a sociopath throughout. But then you have scenes where he's like killing Soji and he's walking away crying. And it's like, I never felt like I understood the true conflict of this character in a way that I really should have.
It made no sense. They were trying to give layers to a character that never actually deserved to have layers. Like, I think it was total BS that the writers would try to portray this guy as a conflicted man. How many of those, you know, like real toxic dudes do you know that are actually just kind of conflicted on the inside? And even if they are, you know, just being terrible, terrible boyfriends, oh, they kind of feel bad deep down. Like, does that guy actually exist? And what's the message? What is the message that the writers are trying to give us? Like, give bad guys a chance? You know, maybe they'll care about you deep down? Like, what?
Well, okay. Let's say they want to analyze a true toxic character in a relationship. That's heavy subject matter, and I think it deserves to be dealt with a level of seriousness. It's very tough to do that when you're then cutting to Narek having very dangerous liaisons, like campy scenes with his sister. Like, that's so camp level that it just doesn't make sense to analyze anything else, you know, with any sort of realism.
Yeah. So with Nepenthe, my favorite line in this episode is, look, Picard makes his escape to Nepenthe with Soji, and you cut back to La Serena, and I believe it's Raffi who says, what about Elnor, who had been left behind in the Borg cube? And guess what, Cam? That was a question I was asking about that character that entire season. What about Elnor? And do you know what they did? That La Serena took off into outer space, left Elnor behind on the Borg cube. That's what it felt like the writers did to this character this entire two season.
And it's still poorly staged of why he stays behind.
It made no sense because they had nothing for him to do on Nepenthe with. They already had like Soji there with Picard, plus Riker and Troy and Carissa. It was weird.
Yeah, and the whole thing, I'm wondering if the philosophy of the warrior nuns makes sense, of this they attach themselves to lost causes. That's admirable, but it also seems like a quick way to, you know, meet your end.
Like, how old do these nuns get to be?
It can't be that old, right? Like, if you're attaching yourself to lost causes, okay, some of them may pan out okay for you, but I feel like the majority are not going to end well.
No. But look, it's fascinating to see Riker and Troy in this stage of their life where Riker is clearly loosened up, but Troy is clearly tightened up. They've gone through trauma. I don't particularly find entertainment in watching people deal with the death of a child. Like, so it was kind of a tough story. Like, why can't people just be happy in the TNG universe? It seems as if they're ultimately, Troy says, you know, like, I'm okay, Jean-Luc, don't worry about me. But it's still kind of a sad story to tell, despite the great material that they ultimately give Marina Sirtis to deliver here.
Well, I would argue it's tied into this whole characters losing hope. Riker and Troy have gone through the most unimaginable scenario possible and have lost hope, but show that they have found it again, that they can smile, they joke around, they have a happy home life, they're moving forward. And so it's very much showing what maybe the other characters on Picard will be doing in the future, but it's kind of a bummer. But I will say, like, this is still my favorite episode of the season. You cut out all the Borg cube stuff from this episode. This is a great episode of television. I mean, it already kind of is. But I was making notes like, this episode has actual dialogue. We're just having scenes where, you know, Kestra is talking to Soji about being, you know, an android. We're having scenes with Riker and Troy talking and just about themselves and their relationships and their hopes and dreams and all this sort of stuff. And it's like classic Star Trek writing. And it's fantastic. I love this episode. I just am so baffled they don't go to that well more. And I was worried initially that I was judging this episode unfairly because I'm watching Picard, Troy, and Riker talk to each other. So therefore, of course, I'm going to like it more. But then I was like, no, hold on. I'm loving all the Kestra Soji stuff. And these are not two characters I'm familiar with. So why are they so much more interesting than, you know, a lot of the conversations going on in other episodes? It's just very strange to me.
Because this episode is not obsessed with plot point, plot point, plot point, plot point, about just getting from A to B and making our characters do inorganic things in order to satisfy where the writers have them pegged next on the storyboard here. That said, Hugh's death, that just sucks. Like, what was the point?
It's lame. Yeah, it's lame. We should say this episode was actually, Nepenthe was co-written by Sam Humphrey, and that's her only episode of the season. So let's maybe get her to write an episode or two next season.
I'll take it. Although, yeah, maybe they'll have a follow-up with Captain Crandall from Infinity Lakes, who they kept talking about him nonstop. I think even in the next episode, there's a Captain Crandall shout-out. What is the importance of this Captain Crandall who never showed up by the finale as I was expecting him to?
Maybe he is a transparent skull.
Okay. Oh,
Like Captain Bidet.
Bidet, yeah.
I had one more note on this, in that I really felt like they really solidified Raffi's character in this episode. They have some substance abuse stuff early on, but you kind of get this vibe. She's kind of the cool aunt character. And I really approached her as that through the end of the series, and that I really like Raffi, and she's someone who's a bit of a train wreck, but she is just like the cool hangout character. And I'm glad we ranked her as high as we did when we did our character rankings, because I really think Michelle Hurd is fantastic. And Rios, Raffi, I think, really pops, especially in the second half of the season.
Well, that's why I kind of enjoy just sitting with these characters so much more this rewatch, is because I knew where it was all going, and so I can just enjoy them. I know one of the things that you, I think it was a very fair criticism of the series, but the supporting cast maybe just did not pop as much as the cast from Discovery Season 1 did at that time. I think there's a lot of potential, especially hoping that Jurati is not going to be, you know, like hypnotized by half Romulans, half Vulcans once again. So you can't do worse with Elnor. So that character can only get better as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fundamental problem, though, with having a show called Star Trek Picard, and that your supporting cast of characters aren't going to get the level of attention that they would if they were on the crew of Discovery, for example. But they cast strong actors, so I'm hopeful we see more of them as a group in season two. And I hope to never again have an episode where I have to watch Jurati throw up twice in an episode.
With all that velvet cake?
Oh, God. Like, I am very queasy about vomit, and this episode did me no favors in that regard.
Who had a better vomit scene, Jurati or Burnham in the season premiere of Star Trek Discovery Season 3?
The water vomit?
That made no sense, or she was just spewing water. Like,
yeah. So I'll still take that one. That one turned my stomach a lot less than the red velvet cake.
Okay. Jumping over to Broken Pieces. I like this one. Like, I don't think the hologram scene worked for you. Like, I know what your criticism is, and like, you're just spending time trying to figure out what's wrong with Rios when Raffi could just go and ask him. I like spending time with her character being kind of this security operative that she was back in Starfleet, figuring things out, doing detective work on her own. And I had fun with those hologram characters. But I also just think that this holistically was an episode that seemed far more consistent, far fewer valleys, even though there might not have been those peaks that we got in the previous episode, but fewer valleys as well. Like, I found this an easier episode to digest than most of the ones that came before it.
Well, I think the block of Invisible Box, Nepenthe, and Broken Pieces is the strongest run in Star Trek Picard. Like, it feels like those three episodes, they're kind of cooking with gas. And then things will get a little shaky after, and things are maybe a little shaky before that. But I feel like these three, they kind of find where they're going, especially because the characters at this point are all connected. Soji's with the crew at this point. We're getting scenes like in Broken Pieces where they're all sitting around a table talking. And I'm like, thank God. Thank God. Give us some relationship building here.
I know.
I did have a thought, though, when I was watching this, this episode where you have Rizzo going around shooting multiple Borg in the head, which seems like a very, like, just a total waste of time if you want to execute Borg. But was the best fate for this character being assimilated by the end versus being, I don't know, kicked down a stair, like a, you know, whatever, a pit?
Well, what I had said at the very beginning of our reviews last season was, like, wouldn't it be interesting if one of the Romulan characters, these Romulans who are fearful of synthetics, who hate synthetics to the core, what if one of them discovers that they are in fact a synthetic? Like, that would bring up some really fascinating and interesting, you know, existential dilemmas that they could deal with. And like you said, by the end, Rizzo gets kicked into a pit. I think she has the opportunity to, I don't know, somehow get assimilated still, even by this detached Borg collective. Like, that could work. But I agree, it would have been far more interesting if that was her fate, you know, earlier on in the season.
I just think it's a much more compelling fate for that character, too, considering what she's done throughout. I mean, most of this character's storyline is her walking around executing Borg.
Yeah. Well, she started off as, like, so I found her to be a far more dynamic character than Narek. And then she ended up kind of being like a mustache twirler by the end as well.
Well, can you tell me what she's doing by the end when she's just hanging out on that Borg cube?
I don't even understand how she made her way over there. Like, she kept getting her ears unrounded and pointed and rounded and like, and kept making visits through holographic subspace and then finally showed up there in person. And I don't know, Cam, to answer your question.
Yeah, it's just felt like, you know, when you see a movie that they've reshot the ending for whatever reason, and they've somehow pasted a character in there where you're like, huh? Like, this doesn't make sense. That's what it felt like with Rizzo at the end there.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump to the two-part finale. I think part one, it kind of worked in like, okay, so we've arrived at the destination. We've set up the stakes. Let's see how things unfold from here. It's interesting, like the Soong appearance, that was something out of thin air and doesn't really make a whole lot of sense based on everything that we know about Noonien Soong, but I'll go with it if it means more Brent Spiner.
And also the line, shame on you, Agnes.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty good. I still love the world building of this episode. I think they really built an amazing looking visual world of these androids. I love all that. The Soong stuff, yeah, it's kind of weird. This is where also Picard's illness rears its head again. Very convenient as we head into the finale. Why did they not pepper more of this throughout the season? I think it could have really worked and been compelling for the character.
Especially if they're going to pull the literal blanket off of a Gollum synthetic. That, like, doesn't it just take all the tension away that would unfold if we just knew that could ultimately be his fate in the next episode?
Yeah.
And Jurati and Soong kept saying like, you've perfected mind transfer. No, I need your help perfecting mind transfer. I'm just like, okay, well, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where we meet Sutra as well. And we see her like breaking Narek out and what have you. And it's like, I would just love to know more about Sutra. Cause I think this is a genuinely interesting character who we do not spend barely any time with.
Well, she'll be back, and maybe if we can jump over to part two, though. But, like, I think she'll be back in season two. And, like, you know, Alden Soong just flicked a switch, and she just, like, collapsed onto the ground. Like, that was kind of a weird disposal of that character. There's no way that they're not bringing her back.
I don't know. Narek didn't get an end, and apparently they're not bringing him back.
Does anyone care, though?
No, I know. But yeah. The show's not great about writing out its villains, given Rizzo's underwhelming finale, Narek's disappearance, and Sutra's being switched off.
And don't forget Bejazel's murder.
At least it has finality, I guess.
Or what about the former Romulan senator who had his head decapitated?
Oh, that guy. Yeah, no kidding. Well, again, finality, I guess.
Yeah. Look, like this episode, even on rewatch, it just doesn't ultimately work for me. I think, like, when you get to the end and you're like, oh, this is what it all adds up to, like, it's a disappointing finale. Picard's death, I felt nothing. Like, I felt more watching Kirk die in Generations than I felt watching Picard die, because I knew he was going to be brought back to life. That said, the goodbye between Data and Picard, it's exquisite. It is like the best stuff that they do in this entire season. And it just unfortunately is sandwiched in there with a rather weak finale that relies a lot on like kind of these action moments that I just don't care about, whether you're, you know, kicking soccer balls with grenades in them or you're creating a Picard maneuver and making just like this messy screen of nothing but copy and pasted ships.
Well, it's just like wall to wall cliches. And a lot of these cliches, Alex Kurtzman has used himself in his Transformers films and Spider-Man films. So it just feels very lazy in that regard. But you are right. Like, as much as this episode really annoys me to watch, the Data stuff is brilliant. I love it. I don't know how I feel about this. I enjoy watching the characters mourn Picard at the end and having those, you know, human touches and or human exchanges between them. But I'm also wondering why they're crying when they're clearly putting Picard in a robot body. So it's manipulative, but I enjoy watching the moments.
It feels unearned.
Yeah. There was an exchange, though, at one point during all the building the sky beam and whatever, where a character goes, "What's going on?" And the other character goes, "Nothing that makes any sense."
I believe it. Also, Guess what, Cam? Picard loves Data. He's loved him this entire time. That's the Picard we know, right?
I'll go with it. I mean, the whole Data story and the idea of this being very much about Data through the season, I'll go with the through line because I think when you get a moment this strong, it really works. I saw someone argue online, though. They're like, wait, why don't they just build a new body for Data on this Android world?
Yeah.
Like, that's an excellent question, and I don't know. But the moment of Picard, you know, holding Data as he dies, very profound stuff. And again, is the exit for that character that we didn't get in Nemesis. I did love, though, Picard being like, saying how he was just tormented by the, you know, Data's sacrifice in Nemesis. I don't know that I really got that, though, watching Nemesis.
No, not really. There's another moment where, you know, Picard wakes up in his Gollum body and he says, am I real? And I think as Jurati says, of course you are. And in my head, like, no, he's not. It's not his consciousness. It is a recreation of his consciousness. It's Picard is dead. His consciousness is gone. They were able to reimagine it into a computer program. That is not the same thing. That is not Picard. Like, and that's what irks me. It's like their message is, whether you're organic or synthetic, we're all just humans. I'm like, no, that makes no sense in our real world. Like if you're trying to do like a applicable allegorical story, I don't know what the allegory is here, Cam.
Right. How much of that do you think is just because of the character of Data is one of the most beloved characters in Star Trek, and so they want to obviously elevate them, and because that's how viewers recognize these characters.
It just seems so disingenuous, though. Like, it just doesn't, like, if that was their goal, I don't think they accomplished it successfully.
Yeah, it's this, I'm more, I guess, willing to go with it in this world where it's like, okay, I can believe that maybe in, you know, this timeline, we would just look at androids in an entirely different way. Sure. Especially if apparently humans are turning into mechanical beings themselves, like Picard. We've kind of blurred the line of the singularity at that point. So I'm willing to go with it.
Is it his consciousness in there? Is it Picard's being continuing on uninterrupted? Or is it a recreation of his consciousness?
Well, it's a recreation, but it's also delving into a level of like science that we can't really explain ourselves because, like, what is consciousness really?
Consciousness ends as soon as you're dead, though. It's like the lights go out, and like Picard's brain dead. Like, okay, they're able to do a brain scan. They're able to manufacture something, you know, like a facsimile. But it's not as if there's any continuity between the organic body that died and what ends up in the Gollum, you know, body. It's not the literal manifestation of his consciousness that he has been developing for the last 100 years. It just isn't.
Should they have made more of a point of the, you know how he's like, am I going to be immortal? They're like, of course not. You're in like the same body, the same age. Nothing's changed whatsoever. Should they have made changes to make that difference more pronounced, especially just for going, you know, in terms of storytelling in seasons 2 and 3?
Yeah, bigger biceps.
No, that's not impossible. We're talking about Patrick Stewart.
Like, good point. But, like, I totally believe that Gollum Picard has all the memories of Jean-Luc. I buy that. But Gollum Picard is a completely 100% different entity than the Jean-Luc Picard that we've known for 30 years, or 30 plus years. Like, they're completely different beings. And one just looks and talks and has the memories of Jean-Luc Picard. That's it.
Well, I'm not really defending this because I wasn't a fan of it when I saw it the first time, and I didn't like it the second time of this whole Picard and the Gollum body. The one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is just on the Blu-ray, Patrick Stewart talking about how eager he is to tackle Picard's new form and what that means in the future. So, like, I'm just very hopeful that the writers aren't just saying, okay, we've got Picard season two. Now he's taking on, I don't know, the Ferengi or something. Like, I'm hoping that Patrick Stewart is pushing the ball on making this more of an exploration of what it means for Picard in this body, in this form. Because obviously we're not getting anything in, what, like a minute and a half at the end of an episode.
No. But I would kind of like season two to be devoted entirely to Picard taking on the Ferengi alliance. That would be amazing.
I would also just like cutaways of Narek going around throwing rocks at spaceships.
I'm okay. No Narek cutaways for me. I'm done with the character. I don't even need them to bring him back for half an episode for closure. I just don't care. I think that character, like, he just wasn't successful. I don't even know why he was in the main credits.
Well, that still doesn't make sense, especially when Rizzo has just as much to do. So when you finished, like, Picard this time, where do you hold it in, like, relation to the other Discovery seasons?
I think it is better than Discovery Season 3. No issues saying that. I liked a lot more of the elements going on in Season 2 of Discovery, although I think that Picard Season 1 is far more consistent than Discovery Season 2. And it just doesn't quite hold the novelty factor that Discovery Season 1 had. So I think I ultimately, I wedge it between Discovery Seasons 2 and 3 in my ranking. What about you?
I tend to put Discovery Season 2 as my favorite, followed by Discovery Season 1. And, like, in my mind, when we finished Picard, you know, whatever it was, almost a year ago, or what, if it was maybe a year, but in my mind, it was like a significant gap between Season 1 Discovery and Picard. And that gap is shrunk quite a bit with this rewatch. As much as we pointed out things we didn't like or things that grated on us in this rewatch, you are right. I think it's the most consistent Star Trek season we maybe have gotten thus far of the new era, other than Lower Decks, which is very consistent. But in terms of the live action stuff, it holds together very well for the most part. And especially like the last season of Discovery, I saw a lot of people saying that they really, it's weird. Season 3 Discovery had a lot of praise and a lot of people saying it was the most consistent of the Discovery seasons. I'm like, I don't know if I agree with that. But to me, like, Picard feels much more cohesive than Discovery Season 3. So I would put Picard in third, but not the shameful third that I was really kicking it down into before my rewatch. I walked away, I think, enjoying much more of the character dynamics this time through, and finding enjoyment just in the journey of the show. And where it would just lose me was these plot-centric things on the Borg cube and stuff, where I would just be like, you know, I didn't fast forward anything, but they're the type of moments I would want to fast forward if I was doing such a thing. So
last spring, if you asked me, did I like Star Trek Picard, I probably would have said, like, eh. But if you ask me now, do I like Star Trek Picard, I'd say, yeah. The show has issues. The show has problems. Every single season of Star Trek does. I'm watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine right now. I'm in the middle of season one. Cam, I'll list off the last few episodes I just watched. Battle Lines, Storyteller, Progress. These are bad episodes. But guess what?
I thought you were going to say that you've got a run of smash hits, though.
Well, you just messed up the ultimately what the punchline was. No, but it's these are not good episodes of Deep Space Nine. I can still sit there and enjoy Jake and Nog trying to trade up, you know, Yamek sauce for self-sealing stem bolts. Like, that stuff is fun. There are so many character moments where I can just sit back and enjoy it, even if I can say, well, this episode as a whole doesn't work for me. The same with Picard. Even if an episode as a whole doesn't work for me, there's enough elements where I'm just like, okay, I like it. I like the characters. There's some interesting things that they're trying to do with Star Trek lore. I can go with it. And I can look forward to what they will try to accomplish in season two, which I hope is more, I don't need a big long season mystery. Like, give me, you know, Picard and the crew of La Serena. They have to go to a planet each week and help everybody out, and Picard gives a speech. Like, I'm okay with that every single week, even if it's not what Patrick Stewart signed up for.
Sure. Or if you're going to have this, you know, overarching story of the season, which I'm pretty sure they will, make it something where, look, the characters have been through their darkest depths and crawled out and found hope again. So what happens when we have a Star Trek show where it is a motley crew of characters, and that's a term they throw around a lot on the documentaries, but like characters who are kind of broken. They aren't perfect. They aren't the TNG crew. So what happens if we have them out there going on missions together? It's dynamics that we haven't really seen a lot, at least in Star Trek. You know, obviously Firefly did that sort of thing, but do that sort of thing. I think it could be really fun. And again, like the revisit did really boost my opinion on a lot of the characters. So I'm hopeful that we can see more of that dynamic in play in season two. Just, you know, we've got this behind us and hey, I love the farewell to Data, but let's find a new angle. Patrick Stewart also says on the Blu-ray that he's very hopeful and sounds almost determined that we will revisit every major TNG character, like all of the main cast characters over the course of Picard. So I'm all for that too, if they do it well.
All right, Tasha Yar, can't wait to see you back on Armus's planet once more.
Well, maybe we'll actually get a finale to Sela.
That would be amazing. And it actually kind of, like, with the Romulan stuff going on, she should come back, right?
Should she have been in this season? It would have been cool.
Yeah. Ken, before we wrap up, though, we just want to give a shout out to, I wouldn't go so far to say fan of the show, but a listener, which is our friend Che Fox. He created this, he and his mom, another friend of ours, Rianne Fox, they created this pretty awesome video disputing our rankings of all the main Star Trek characters. They really give it to us in this, and they also have some very thoughtful notes on how they would rank all the Star Trek characters. We posted a link on our Facebook page, so go search Subspace Transmissions on Facebook, and you can find the link right there. It is so entertaining. I would give it my nod of approval right there.
I definitely laughed out loud more than a couple times.
Yes.
And you know what? If you're going to be a critic, be funny and sharp and witty, and hey, I'll appreciate it. I really enjoyed some of the shots across the bow at us, so it was a lot of fun.
I would certainly encourage you to take your own advice, Cam.
That's right. Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Let us know about your Picard rewatches. Did revisiting the show make any difference for you? We'd love to know. Okay, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are going to be discussing the stakes in Star Trek. I don't mean, you know, beef or anything like that. I'm talking about like the emotional thrust of an episode and why you don't have to have it like a life or death situation every single time. It'll be a fun one. We've got some ideas in which we're really kind of comparing what makes you invested in a Star Trek episode.
There's actually a line in episode 2 of Picard where a character says, "Everything is at stake." So I look forward to diving into maybe how that shouldn't necessarily always be the case in your stories. So this should be fun. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in villain of all villains, Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in narc, needs no outro.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.